This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry here with Eric Dahl.
Hey, hey, hey.
Well, we're recording just after the close today, December 16th. I've been battling the flu all week, so we'll try to keep this short, try to see how long my voice lasts. But Eric, my biggest question for you is Argentina or France?
You know, that's a complicated one, but I'm going to say Argentina's going to find a way to pull it out. What do you say?
So Messi's going to get his World Cup trophy. I kind of lean that way too. I mean, it's probably more hoping to see Messi win the trophy. And since France just won it 4 years ago, I'd like to see Argentina win it.
I think it's a good matchup, though. Should be exciting to watch all the action.
Exactly. Well, let's get in. Speaking of action, let's get into the where are we for the week. It was an interesting week. As we'll talk about on the macro front. There was a lot going on early in the week, but it was really the last couple of days where we saw the S&P drop a lot. Ended the week down, looks like just over 2% on the week. The one lone sector that was up is energy, up 2%. Looks like all the other sectors were down. Utilities was the other best performer, down only 50 basis points. And the worst performer looks like consumer discretionary, down almost 4%. That brings your year to date, and we got two more weeks till the end of the year. Year-to-date on the S&P down 17.9%. Looking at the sector composition, energy still up 57%, and communication services, the worst performer, down 37.5%. If we go to large cap, small cap, large cap was down 1.85% on the week, and small cap down a little bit worse, 1.9%. Similar growth and value, growth was down 2.2%, and value was down only 1.5%. So that kind of rounds out the equity market. It really kind of seemed like the market was going to hold in there after the Fed, but really the last 2 days,
yeah,
the really Fed, the big movers.
Maybe the market had too much of a party on Wednesday, Fed day, and woke up with a bad hangover the next day.
Yeah, that's that 2 day hangover. That's the champagne hangover.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I always like to think that the champagne always gives the worst hangovers, but. Maybe that's just me. If we go to the fixed income side, we ended the 2 year ended the week down 16 basis points to 4.19%. Likewise, the 10-year down to 3.48. That's down 9 basis points, and then the long bond was pretty much flat at 3.55. So a rally in rates across the curve, and especially on the 2 year side of things, down 16 bips. That brings the twos, tens. Down to a negative 70 basis, or I guess up to a negative 70 basis points. That's flattened 6 basis points on the week. And 3 month 10-year still negative at a negative 82, actually, as we'll talk about the Fed raising interest rates, the 3 month to 10-year down to a negative 82 basis points. And that's 10 basis points more negative on the week. How did that translate into the fixed income markets? As you would imagine, with a rally in rates, fixed income market was up. The aggregate index was up 80 basis points. Looking across the curve, it looks like agency mortgage, or across the sectors, agency mortgages with the best performer up 1.2%. Investment grade corporate bonds up only 50 basis points, and treasuries up 70. So kind of a surprise, at least to me, looking at this with the rally in rates, you think that investment grade corporates would be a better performer given their longer duration, but being the worst performer out of those three sectors of the aggregate index. I guess when you look at the corporate credit sector, the riskier side of things, high yield was down, call it down 5 basis points. So call it a flat on the week. So maybe that's why that kind of leaked into the corporate space and the investment grade side. EM was up 10 basis points and bank loans, the floating rate side, was up 40 basis points. So all in all, a pretty good week there for the fixed income markets, as you would expect, given that rally in interest rates. Ag still down almost 11% on the year. So unless we get a huge rally over the next 2 weeks, I think it's safe to say we're going to, the ag's going to end the year with the worst performance ever.
I think that's a pretty safe bet considering the hawkish tone of Mr. Powell, but we'll get into that later.
That's right. If we move over to the commodity side of things, oil, it was, you know, it closed very low at 71 last week, as Eric, as you and I talked about. It says up to 74.3 to today. That's up 4.5% on the week. Gold down slightly at 1790. And looking at the overall, the BCOM overall, up 1% on the week. Looks like energy leading that way, up 3.9% on the back of that oil price move. Looks like industrial metals, the worst performer, down slightly over 4% on the week. So as expected, you know, commodities are pretty volatile there. Copper was down 3.3%, kind of the bellwether as people look at it. And I think that, I guess the other one that we joked about last week as a commodity, Bitcoin, still hanging in there, close around to that 17,000 level. It looks like as of time of recording, it's at 16,865, so down 1.5% on the week.
Yeah, it doesn't look like there's any love Santa Claus rally in Bitcoin's future, but we'll see. Maybe I think the crypto market's made a liar out of many prognosticators over its course of its existence.
Yeah, we'll see. We didn't get a, you know, usually we used to see a holiday bounce and around the Thanksgiving holiday when people were talking it up. But you didn't get much of a drawdown there. You know, it's down 1.4% on the month. So not much of a drawdown of people getting out of Bitcoin after having their Thanksgiving. So maybe we're kind of hit a relative floor, I would think, on how low Bitcoin can get.
Yeah, I think that's a good kind of roundup to transition to the macro for the week. And it was really a tale of 2 weeks from my point of view. You had the earlier part of the week, kind of let's say Monday through Wednesday, and then you had the latter part of the week, Thursday and Friday. So interestingly, Tuesday you had NFIB Small Business Optimism print for November, and the print was 91.9, which was an increase over the estimate of 90.5. And, you know, there was some kind of general optimism in there, with business owners expecting conditions to be up over the next 6 months. And you only had a 43% expecting a recession. Then on Tuesday, we had the CPI print for November, month over month. It came in at 0.1%, which was a decline versus expectations. And that was a big beat, I would say. The CPI month over month for November was below expectations by 0.2%. Looking at it from a year-over-year perspective, CPI year-over-year came in at 7.1%, below the estimate of 7.3%. Looking at the less volatile food and energy perspective, the CPI ex food and energy year-over-year came in at 6.0%, below the estimate of 6.1%. And I think the kind of the equity market at least took a lot of solace in that. And There was a rally where investors kind of thought that maybe that indicated that the Fed would consider pivoting its rhetoric or at least kind of changing its policies regarding interest rates next year. I personally thought it was a very positive report from a consumer standpoint. It's good to see some of these numbers roll off, but as we talked about last week, and as has been talked about on Monday Morning Minutes many times, the CPI baskets are pretty complicated. And you heard Chairman Powell discussing that. We're going to get into it in the topic of the weeks, but he thinks of CPI in like three buckets, I think were the words he used. Is that right, Mr. Mayberry?
That's right. Three buckets, goods inflation, housing services, and then non-housing related core services was his three buckets. And yeah, as we get to the talk about the Fed, I'll get into those a little bit more in depth.
Yeah, but of those three buckets, you could maybe be positive about the first two, but the last is where Mr. Powell has a lot of concern, and it'll be something to talk about in our topic of the weeks. Kind of rolling on, we got the Federal Reserve FOMC rate decision. They hiked interest rates by 0.5% to 4.25 to 4.5% range, and that was in line with market expectations. I think that another interesting data point that came in on Wednesday that didn't get as much press was the import prices index year over year for November came in at 2.7%, which was a decline of 0.5% from the estimate of 3.2. And the CEO of II, Mr. Gundlach, has often stated he likes to look at import prices because you can't game import prices as much. They're kind of more indicative of how the global economy is doing. So with import prices declining, I think that that lends evidence to the kind of market expectation and that the kind of core goods could continue to trend down over the next, 6 to 12 months. But the big bucket that Mr. Powell mentioned, the kind of core services where wages are a part of, that's, I think, what the Fed is worried about. And on Thursday, we got initial jobless claims for the week ending December 10th, and they came in 21,000 below the estimate at 211K. So the job market, the labor market in the United States is very strong. And it's going to be a continuing point of concern for the Federal Reserve because they want to get inflation under control. And as long as that services component, which has a lot of wage pressures, it's still hot. I think that's the part of the CPI that maybe the market isn't looking at as closely. And they're thinking, okay, import prices are down, goods prices are down, energy prices are down. Well, what about this other part? So that's something to keep an eye on. Continuing claims for the week came in at 1,671,000, which was basically flat. It was down 3K. And then today, Friday, we had the S&P Global U.S. Manufacturing PMI, the December preliminary number, come in at 46.2, which was a drop from the estimate of 47.8. Then we had the S&P Global U.S. Services PMI come in at 44.4, a drop of 2.1 from the estimate. And I think those were pretty bearish prints. There's a lot of talk on the trading desk about those indicators being quite bearish. And that kind of rounds up the macro for the week.
Yeah, it's interesting about those previously known as market PMIs seem to have been much more bearish than the ISM numbers. And I've just looked as you were talking, Eric, and we don't get the ISM numbers until January 4th. So we have a long way to go to see if the ISM corroborates those S&P Global numbers. If we get into the topic of the week, then we talk about the Fed. First, we'll talk about the dots. Usually it's the summary of economic projections, also known as the dot plots. And one of the questions, and I'll just cut to the chase here in the Q&A, was someone asked him asked Chair Powell whether the CPI data that came out on the Tuesday, so the first day of the Fed meetings, was incorporated into people's economic projections. And he said, it's never the case that the SEPs don't reflect an important piece of data that came in on the first day of the meeting. So there was some talk about whether that was true or not before Powell answered the question. So he was pretty much, it was one of his rare, like, This is how it is. He was very clear and concise in that answer. If we do look at the dots, the Fed, the committee is showing the median estimate of Fed funds rate for the end of 2023 at 5.13%. So we're going to end this year, 2022, at 4.38 is kind of the middle of the range. So they expect it to go to 5.13. If we look at the market, if we look at the Fed fund futures market, the Fed fund futures market is pricing in a 4.36 implied rate at the end of 2023, and we don't even get to a peak of 5.13 that the Fed is showing is their what they think is going to be the end point for 2023. The market is pricing in, looks like, a 4.85 is the peak implied rate. That's in the May 2023 meeting.
So the market's calling the Fed's bluff a little bit, or at least calling the market, the calling the Fed out, I should say.
Yeah. Market doesn't believe, I mean, the Fed, and one of the questions that came up in the presser was about considering rate cuts. And Powell said he wouldn't see them considering rate cuts until they're confident that inflation is moving down to 2% and that they're not forecasting any rate cuts in 2023. And the market is certainly forecasting rate cuts in 2023. Not so the market's saying we're not even going to get as high as you think we're going to get. And we're also forecasting that you're going to cut rates. Now, looking out to 2024, the Fed has four rate cuts or 425 basis point rate cuts priced in on the median. The median is down to 413 on the Fed funds rate, but it's a pretty wide dispersion. One person has it with the Fed funds rate at 575 or just below 575, all the way. Someone has it just above 3%. So pretty wide range there. Which is, I guess, why we look at the median as opposed to kind of some average or the range of rates, but still to go to price in four rate cuts in 2024. I guess that means the Fed will have gotten inflation down to 2%, and then they'll want to be not as restrictive as they have been. So maybe that's where they're thinking they're gonna, that where those that rate shakes out as. If we go to the other points on the SEP, they think that 2023 real GDP will be about 50 basis points. So that would fall under the softish landing that Chair Powell was looking for. That's down from a 1.2, which was the expectation from the September dots. They expect unemployment rate to rise by 90 basis points from 3.7 today to 4.6. So that's a little bit of an increase over the September numbers. And inflation will end 2023, or the PCE inflation. Well, let's look at core PCE, since that's the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. They think that 2023 will end at 3.5% and in 2024 at 2.5%. So we get down to that 3.5, then I guess that's the Fed will have seen that trend as a sustained trend downward. So they'll feel a little bit more comfortable not hiking rates as much. And then as we get closer to that 2%, cutting rates.
I think one of the interesting things I picked up on from Mr. Powell during his discussion of the SEP was he basically said nobody knows what's going to happen economically, and the Fed is just committed to getting inflation back down to that target. And I think that's really one of the important takeaways is, okay, yeah, the GDP numbers are in the SEP, the inflation numbers are in the SEP, but the key thing Powell conveyed was the Federal Reserve of the United States is committed to getting inflation back down towards their target, and they're going to do whatever they have to get it there.
Yeah, and I didn't think anything. There was no, he pretty much stayed on point. He hasn't changed his message. He still thinks higher for longer, and that it's really that, you know, they're focused on getting inflation under control. There was a couple things though that did stick out, I guess, Eric, as you talked earlier, his three buckets of inflation. He said goods inflation, and he said now that we see supply conditions are getting better, that goods inflation is coming down. You have housing services. He says it's been, quote, very, very high. So two varies there. And that will continue to go up as rents expire and people have to have their rental agreements renewed at higher rates. But he does expect that will come down sometime next year. That's a pretty broad point there as in sometime next year, but I think that people are forecasting that out. And then the non-housing related core services, which make up 55% of the PCE core inflation. He said basically that's a function of the labor market. And here we go, two varies again. It's a very, very strong labor market, one where they haven't seen much softening, where job growth is very high, where wages are very high. So that's really, as you said, Eric, that's really their focus is on the labor market, on job growth, on wages, and trying to, they're not going to come out and say they're going to try to keep wages down because they want to keep wages up, but they also want them not to get out of control. And I think that's, I think when Powell breaks down into those three buckets and kind of writes off the first two as we're not worried about those, then it's that third bucket that makes up such a large percentage of core PCE that they're focused on.
Absolutely. He doesn't want to be Ebenezer Scrooge before Christmas, but, he definitely has his eye on the labor market.
And there was a couple good questions, I thought, from the presser. One was about asking about financial conditions and how rates have fallen, and interest, long-term interest rates have fallen a lot since the September meeting. And Chair Powell just basically said that financial conditions have tightened significantly in the past year, and their policy actions work through financial conditions, which affect economic activity, labor market, and inflation. And it's really the financial conditions anticipate and react to what the Fed does, and they're not really focused on short-term moves, which he would say that the last 3 months is a short-term move, but on long-term persistent moves. And so, when the S&P is down so much this year, I think that he's looking at that as saying that that's part of the financial conditions tightening that they want to see. And he said, I would say it's our judgment today that we're not at a sufficiently restrictive policy stance yet, which is why we say that we would expect that ongoing hikes would be appropriate, end quote. And I think that that's the message that he's trying to convey, is they're going to keep raising rates, get to that 513 median hike, median rate level, and then kind of keep them there for the rest of the year. The people were asking about why they raised so quickly, and whether they would think that that's coming in the future. And Chair Powell said that, inflation, they were kind of caught off guard by how strong inflation was and how persistent it was, and that it was very important for them to move very quickly. And that was the most important thing, was the pace at which they moved. And now that they've raised 425 basis points in the year, they're into restrictive territory. He says, quote, "It's not so important how fast we go. It's far more important to think what is the ultimate level. And then it's at a certain point, the question will become, how long do we remain restrictive?" End quote. And so I think that's really the key there is, and maybe this is why you got a little bit of a market rally on Wednesday. People were looking at it as, okay, we're going to get that, quote unquote pivot. That's not really a pivot, and not really be raising at these 50 or 75 basis point rate hikes anymore, but go back to what we're more comfortable with, the 25 basis point rate hikes.
Yeah, I think one of the other things to kind of throw in there is what happened after the Fed. You had Lagarde and the ECB raise interest rates in Europe by 0.5%. And you actually had 1/3 of the committee who wanted to raise rates by 0.75%. And there was a strong commitment to raising rates in the new year in Europe as well. So I think that kind of back-to-back central bank tightening kind of just sets the tone for, you're going to have tighter financial conditions around the globe, at least in the West, in 2023.
Yeah, and it seems like, every time we look over at Europe and see how the European economies are doing, it's like, oh, this will give us a good clue to how the U.S. economy is going to go, because Europe seems to be ahead of the, I guess it's a bad thing to be ahead of the curve and going into recession.
Yep.
Europe seems to be ahead of the curve there, but certainly the ECB behind the curve in terms of rate hikes. And the Fed has been ahead of the curve there. So, I guess from the U.S. perspective, if you look at U.S. versus Europe, you'd rather be in the U.S.'s position than Europe's position right now. The last thing I wanted to talk about was a question about changing the inflation target from 2%. And this is one where Powell was a little bit, he came out pretty strong in his answer, but then got a
very
little
aggressive. Yeah.
But then got a little wishy-washy at the end. And it was like, it was one of those things where he just talked for a little bit too long. And he said, quote, "Changing our inflation goal is just something we're not thinking about. And it's something that we're not going to think about. We have a 2% inflation goal, and we'll use our tools to get inflation back to 2%. I think this isn't the time to be thinking about that. I mean, there may be a longer run project at some point, but that's not where we are at all. The committee, we're not considering that. We're not going to consider that under any circumstances. We're going to keep our inflation target at 2%. We're going to use our tools to get inflation back to 2%, end quote. And if he took out the maybe a longer run project at some point, then that was a perfect answer. It's 2%. It is what it is. Deal with it. Instead, he's like, oh, it's a longer run project at some point. That kind of gave people the idea that, oh, maybe we'll get, start targeting 2.5% or 3%. There's not really not much different from a 2% or 3% inflation. But it kind of muddied the waters a little bit for people, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. He came out strong. He probably talked too long. He confused himself a little bit, but I think the psyche of the FOMC is they want to get inflation back down to their 2% target. We know, though, that they've changed the goalposts over time. So I think the questioner who posed that question was trying to maybe prod at that a little bit.
Yep. I mean, and that's it. It was a, you know, a pretty pretty tame, you know, Fed meeting. There's some volatility. You know, we always like to, look at the Dow. And Eric, you posted where the S&P was right when Powell walks up to the podium, because we always like to see how the market reacts to,
yeah,
to what he says. And you know, one point there, he started, and Dow was down like 100 points, and one point it was down 300, and I think it ended actually positive when Chair Powell ended all of his comments. So from that perspective, it's a pretty good, it was a pretty good press conference from Powell. One thing I thought was interesting, though, is that, again, and it's been the last three or four press conferences, no questions about QT and balance sheet. Maybe the reporters are just not getting, they're not asking those questions, and or they're not getting called on if they want to ask that question.
I think that's
it's interesting.
That's a good point to bring up for our listeners, is even if the Federal Reserve slowed its pace of hikes, which it might only hike by 25 at its February meeting, they're still doing a massive amount of quantitative tightening, and that will keep the longer end of the interest rate curve in the U.S. in more of a bear market than people might expect.
Yeah, definitely. And so that's something to keep an eye on going into next year. With that, Eric, I front ran myself. Why don't you want to talk on the things to keep an eye on the macro front over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, we're going to kind of go 2 weeks because we're getting into the end of the year here. On the December 21st, we have the Conference Board Consumer Confidence, somebody to keep an eye on. On December 22nd, we get a GDP update. And that should be an interesting print. The expectation is 2.9%. Also on the 22nd of December, we get the leading economic indicators, and that's expected to fall another 0.4%. On the 23rd, we get personal income and spending. Income's expected to be up 0.3, spending up 0.2, which will be down from last month, so not necessarily a positive sign. And then on the 23rd, we get PCE month over month, the expectation is to be 0.1% from 0.3%. Year over year, it's expected to be 5.5%, declining from 6.0%, which would be a positive development from the Fed's point of view. That would put core PCE up 0.2%, which would be flat versus last month, and it would leave the year over year number at 4.6%, down from 5%. So that, I think that's an important indicator to look at, considering that's the Fed's claimed favorite inflation indicator right now. And lastly, we have on December 27th, the S&P CoreLogic 20 City Home Price Index expected to be down 1.2%, bringing the year over year to 10.4%, which is still quite strong, but you know, it kind of shows the continued weakness in the housing market. Everybody has an opinion on housing, but it doesn't seem like the housing market's going to have a lot of legs considering the higher rate environment we're in and just the astronomical prices relative to history.
Yeah, so those are always good. That's a good data point to kind of end. You know, it's interesting that as you're talking, you know, the 27th is the last data point. There's only one data point really that last week of the year that's worthwhile, and that's that home price index. And so I would expect the next 2 weeks to be pretty pretty light trading anyway. So could be some vol around the end of the year when you you know, have a smaller population on the trading desks. But it's always an interesting time, and shouldn't be too many market moving events, I wouldn't think, but you know, something to keep an eye on. And with that, I think that that wraps it up for this week, Eric. And I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you all. Thanks to all of our listeners. And we definitely wish you a very happy holidays this year. Make sure you get every episode of Monday Morning Minutes. You can always subscribe and download the episodes and get them before the bell We're available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Always send us information on Twitter at DL Minutes. You can send us our questions on email at minutes@doubleline.com.
Yeah, and check out our website, doubleline.com. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/doubleline capital. You can watch a recent global discussion with Jeffrey Gundlach and Felix Zuloff. And let me just check right now real quick. Jeffrey was on TV on CNBC on Wednesday following the Fed meeting. It's not up yet, but I would expect that to be up soon. Unfortunately, I missed it because of my TV provider was got a DDoS attack, and I was down for a few hours. So I'm looking forward to watching that replay on our YouTube channel. Also, don't forget to follow Sam, who should be back here in a couple of weeks for our year end wrap up show. Make sure to follow Sam and Jeff Sherman on Twitter there on our other podcast. It's at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great holiday season.
The audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Copyright 2022, DoubleLine.